Welcome to True Crime in the Low Country, where we explore the darkest corners of the region's criminal history. Join host Frank Santarella and co-hosts Crime and Cask, Jim Cask, and Elaine Greenwood of Superwoke News as they dissect the chilling details of the Murdaugh murder trial, a case that has gripped the nation and exposed years of fraud, deception, and tragedy. It's true crime in the Low Country, and the truth is just around the corner.
All right. You're listening to True Crime in the Low Country with Elaine Greenwood of Superwoke News. You can find her on X. And Jim Cask from Crime and Cask. Jim, is that
crime?
What's that? Look at me.
I said, look at you. You got it right.
CrimeandCask.com.
Got it.
All the latest stuff that you'll find there. And this is WVFF 97.7 LPFM, Red Brick Patriot Radio, broadcasting from Cottageville, South Carolina. Hey, folks. Listen, I'm glad I made it at all today. I had a case of the dumbbells, you know?
We're thrilled to have you join us, Frank.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you.
It was the kitty's fault, is what you were saying?
Oh, yeah, the kitty's busted through a screen. Well, listen, it's like this. My daughter's dog busted through the screen, her late dog, about a year ago. And I fixed it and this and that, blah, blah, blah. Well, the kitties decided that they wanted access to the porch, and they tore it up. So I ordered a screen and all this stuff, but I got to take a door down. I got to take some lattice off. It was, oh, my goodness. But I know how to do it, and it's done.
What do you got, monkey? You got some of those monkeys running around your backyard driving your cats nuts?
No, squirrels. Let me tell you something. You should see. I wish I hunted half as well as these, as these cats. My God.
Well, Jim's just trying to be distracting. You know, those monkeys, most of them got hired by the New York Post to replace some of those aged-out reporters that they had. There still are some running around. Yeah, no, I didn't say it, so there you go. That's 20,000. I enticed you. I tricked you into saying it. But there are still some of them running around, aren't there?
No, if so, it's like a half a dozen.
I think there's three or four.
Yeah. And you want? Let me tell you the truth. I bet you they miscounted. Either they miscounted, or the monkeys fell peril to the illegal immigrants from Ohio, or is it Ohio? that eat cats. Yeah. They're eating cats.
I think it was.
They're eating dogs. They're eating the monkeys. But anyway.
Yeah, but anybody that would eat a cat or a dog would much prefer a monkey. We all know that.
Okay,
now you guys, let's get down to what's really important right now, which is, what did you not get for Christmas that you really wanted?
This is family radio. We're not talking about that.
I'm stunned. Oh, my little ears. Oh, my. I can't even imagine what you're talking about there, Jim. Frank. And, Jim, what did you not get?
You know, I'm just more happy at Christmas time seeing my kids open up presents. I don't really don't need anything. I did get some clothes, which I badly needed because I've lost so much weight. I've lost like 40 pounds since last year. And I've lost like...
Wow.
4 inches in my waistline, so none of my old pants fit.
Well. You're looking pretty good, though, Jim. I saw you in October, and I like you made the cover of Time magazine, right? Did you put that cover on TikTok?
I did. Yeah.
I think it's an excellent photo of yours. Yeah.
Personally.
So I'm going to send you a video clip. and see if maybe you can lobby for me to be on the cover of Time magazine too. You take a still from, okay, let's work on that. Well, congratulations.
Is this, are you referring to the Time magazine cover that was on crimeandcask.com? Is that where I saw it?
I think it's on ccnewsnetwork.com.
Yes, but if I, but if you...
At the same domain name, actually. If you go to one, you'll get to it.
So,
it might have been there. It's what?
That's it. Just go to timemagazine.com. It's there.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jim, last night we were talking, and then I got distracted by some other project I'm getting sucked into. But you have an interesting theory. It gets down to this: sometimes the absence of a void is proof of something. And I was saying at first, no, the absence of evidence is not evidence. It's just, it leaves open speculation and I think wild theory. But you're right. It's a negative space that has meaning. And so you were looking at, I don't know, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so when I interview people, I not only listen to what they tell me, but it's also what they don't tell you. And what that means is, it's same as like coaching, right? When you coach somebody or you're looking at the other team, you see what they do on a consistent basis. You see what their actions are. And so if you know the people that you're interviewing, or you know the people and you know what actions they do on a consistent basis, and then there's all of a sudden an absence of that, there's usually a reason behind the absence.
What's up?
Maybe it's just, you know, they didn't feel good for 2 or 3 days, but who knows? I mean, that's why you investigate these things. Myra Crosby wrote a book, and I helped her write, called Because Enough is Enough.
All right, listen.
It's Juror 785. She got removed from the Alex Murdaugh trial. We're all well aware of Alex Murdaugh.
All right. Bye-bye.
So I came across a tweet that came to me just this week, actually, but it was from August, and it was from a podcaster called Liz Farrell.
Oh, my goodness.
No, wait, Jim, it's from August of 2024, this tweet.
Correct.
Okay.
And it was right about the time that Myra's book came out.
All right, it's this past August.
Yeah, and she makes a note. It's kind of like disbelief and trying to discredit Myra. And where she talks about Juror 75 has denied having to have an opinion about Alex's guilt at the time she was dismissed. That's true. She goes on to say she's also repeatedly denied violating Judge Newman's orders not to discuss the case. That's true as well. She asks the question, she goes, so how would Becky have known what Juror 785's views were?
Everybody knew. Everybody watching the show, lots of people watching the trial understood from her mannerisms, her physical mannerisms, they had a feeling, nobody knew for sure, but a lot of people had a feeling that she was leaning a particular way. Is Liz Farrell the arbiter of what all of humanity is supposed to or is allowed to think? Because I don't recall voting her into that position or even feeling she was qualified to hold that position if she accidentally got voted into it. She's kind of an idiot.
She further goes on to say, Becky would have needed to know where 785, that's by Myra, where 785 stood in order to execute her plan. No. Her master plan.
No.
What was... Whoa. What was the master plan?
To get rid of... To get Alec convicted. For sure. To get Alec convicted. To sell more books.
To get rid of Myra.
Yeah, and to do that, it was identified that she was unique among the jurors in that she seemed to have a connection to Alec or sympathy for Alec.
But that master plan sounds so complicated. It sounds so...
When you understand what you're doing. It's complicated for you and I, Frank, because we don't know how to get a juror kicked off a jury. But the clerk of the court did.
Yeah, we do.
We really don't. You and I barely can walk and chew gum at the same time. We could not, even if we were, let's say, the murder trial of the century, whatever, you and I sitting there, really, we would speculate about it. But to actually do something, no.
All right. So carry on. This Machiavellian master plan. Okay.
Yeah. So she finishes.
Well, we know it exists because the plan itself is the plan, not the rest of, not the minutiae of the plan, But the fact that Becky tampered with the jury because she had any communication with them that was of and concerning what they were deliberating about, we know that occurred. We know she's being investigated for that. And we know that of the nine issues in the appellate brief raised by the defense, two of them, only two of the nine, relate to what Jim's talking about. But they don't. At no point in that brief is there anything about the details of it. Nobody mentions Christine Avery. The minutia of it is irrelevant. That's the importance of
from a legal standpoint. From a legal standpoint,
from the brief,
you are
from
correct.
the legal brief.
From the public's perception. She said she couldn't have known where 785 stood. Becky couldn't have known where she stood unless 785 was shooting her mouth off, which she says she didn't. So basically, I'm saying, what a bunch of clowns. That's the end of her tweet.
Well, Jim, how come I couldn't agree with you more? They are a bunch. They are a bunch of clowns, and the fact
now,
that you that we give them the credit for having some Machiavellian plan, I don't think that they have the brain power.
Frank, they do because they have money involved. What's the motivating? What are the two greatest motivations
Sex
and money.
Sex and money.
And they've pushed this entire crazy narrative about the evil Alec Murdoch empire from the very beginning because they monetized it. They absolutely had the means and the ability and the connections in media and with the prosecution to take this forward.
And who are you referring to right now? Who are you referring to? Liz Farrell and Mandy Matney?
I'm referring to the clear conduct of Becky Hill and the knowledge that somebody, whoever it is, did act in concert with her. She did not do what she did all by herself. What I think is odd, Jim, and you've got to think it's odd. Why hasn't she been prosecuted at this point? Why you say this? I saw an article you wrote, and you're talking about in 110 days, the state had filed against Alec Murdoch. And what has it been? It's been about 400 days since we became aware that Becky Hill tampered with the jury. Even Toll concedes that she tampered with the jury. And yet I don't see her being prosecuted. I don't see her being prosecuted. It's like three times as long as
it's less time to indict Alec Murdoch than it has to even remotely touch Becky Hill.
I agree. So what do you think that's about? Why do you think there's no will to hold her accountable? And do you think that'll change in the new year?
I've said this 100 times. If indicting Becky Hill on jury tampering gets Alec Murdoch one inch closer to a new trial, they will never indict.
It doesn't. They're separate things. And Alec's appeal is filed. It's already filed. Okay, so he didn't raise any of these things as an issue. He has nine issues. It's actually on page one of his brief.
Well, if they indict her as jury tampering, you're the legal expert here. If they indict Becky Hill, the state of South Carolina indicts Becky Hill for jury tampering in the Alex Murdoch trial, isn't that admitting, so to speak, before a conviction, isn't that admitting that his trial was tampered with?
We're already there. Judge Toll, in the January 29th of 2024 hearing, admits that she had this inappropriate communication with jurors. That's the basis of the appeal. Not any details about it, but just simply.
How can
it's because it's presumed. It is presumed prejudicial. That's why Remmer is important. You don't have to go beyond the presumption that it's prejudicial, the presumption that it's been proven. That's why of the nine issues that they raise in the appeal, only two relate to what we're talking about here, and both of them are procedural because to get a second trial, he doesn't need to prove more. So Becky getting charged, Becky getting prosecuted, Becky getting convicted is a separate issue. It's fascinating. I think that the public is interested in it. but it is totally separate at this point and for all time going forward from Alec Murdoch getting a new trial. They're no longer related. His own defense team said, of what happened, these two points are relevant. They're the ones we're arguing, and it has to do with Remmer and the presumption. Once you have the presumption of prejudice, you don't need to go beyond it. You don't continue arguing the point. So what we're talking about here is relevant to a criminal trial against Becky Hill. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. But I don't see a will to go after her. There's no. There certainly isn't any will in media to shoot. You know, media is not going to shoot themselves in the foot and say, you know, we got it totally wrong. Not only that, we were at her birthday party celebrating what a great gal she is while she's engaged in jury tampering in the trial of the century.
They had a birthday party for her?
Becky Hill?
Yeah.
That media attended?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
I wasn't invited, damn it.
Aww. No, Frank, we didn't want to tell you. We've been holding back on you. We didn't want to tell you because we knew how offended you would be. Yeah.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, so...
I can't believe it.
Frank, I got to tell you something else. There's no Easter Bunny. There's really no Santa Claus.
No. If I'm walking down the street and I see Becky Hill, she says, "Hi, Frank." And that's great. And I wasn't invited to her birthday party? Oh, no. I'm appalled.
You're not.
I'm appalled.
I would be offended. I would be deeply, deeply offended. It should be a chapter in your book.
I wasn't invited either, Frank, if that's any consolation.
Excuse me? I mean...
I wasn't invited.
Hey, wait a minute. Liz Farrell was invited?
I think she was the guest of honor.
Don't feel offended. Don't feel offended then. Because the guest list had nothing to do with pretty. You and I are pretty.
That's right.
All right.
Now, wait a minute. Of the three of us, I think by far Jim is the prettiest. Or he has the best use, of artificial intelligence. You know,
I got to tell you something. You say that and you let that roll off your tongue. Me, with the lack of any intelligence, only thing I have is artificial intelligence. So take that.
Okay, so let's go back to this about the negative, the absence. Let's get back to what you're talking about, that something stopped happening regularly.
You have to go back to the timeline. And I'm going to go through this timeline. Frank, I'm going to blow your mind because I love blowing your mind. Every time you're like, you just blew my mind, Jim. I'm going to do it again. And we're going to go through this timeline of how the egg juror was dismissed. And it starts, right? She was dismissed on March 2nd, right, of 2023. But it starts back on February 17th,
all right.
Friday, February 17th. Okay, let's just go back in time. Everybody close your eyes unless you're driving. Close your eyes and just let's go back in time.
Oh, you can close your eyes if you're driving.
As Pee Wee Lewis says, let's go back in time. All right, so Friday, February 17th, the jurors ate lunch. And the lunch that they ate that day, and I've confirmed this with multiple jurors, is Domino's pizza.
That's disgusting.
That in itself doesn't constitute anything, but what I will say about Domino's Pizza is that, according to the jurors, Domino's Pizza is the only lunch during the whole trial that they ate that was not from a local restaurant, meaning it was a national chain, and the owner who owns that lives in Colorado. So we're going to get to the connection Domino's Pizza here in a little bit, but they ate lunch on February 17th. So on Saturday, February 18th, Myra and her husband, they delivered a new refrigerator to some tenants that they have. And one of the tenants works at Domino's Pizza.
Okay.
So, and I talked about that was the only lunch. It's also alleged that Christine Avery is an employee, was an employee at Domino's Pizza, and was allegedly a friend or knew Becky Hill very well. Christine Avery, we'll get to her in a moment.
All right, Christine question, Avery. Question. Was Christine Avery the person that received the new refrigerator?
No,
she is not.
All right.
She worked there. She worked there. Christine Avery is the one who sent the anonymous email to Judge Newman.
Okay.
That said that Myra was talking.
All right.
So Christine Avery and Myra's tenant worked together at the same Domino's there.
Okay. All right.
All right. So that is Saturday the 18th. Less than a week later, on Thursday, February 23rd, Alex Murdaugh took the stand, right? Big news. Everybody was like, oh, my God, he's taking the stand. And where Myra was sitting, all the jurors sat the same spot every day. They didn't move. So wherever they sat, day one is where they sat on the last day. And her spot was in the first row, against the wall, the second seat in against the wall. So where the witness box is, she was directly across. Whoever was on that witness box, she was staring right at him and just feet away. Now, let's go back to Murdaugh. You remember when Murdaugh started crying and I mean, the snot and the tears and everything was coming down? I mean, it was just...
Yes.
You know, it was all coming out.
And he needed to wipe his nose. It was disgusting. It was hard to watch. You're thinking, oh, for God's sake, please, somebody give that guy some Kleenex. Because it was...
Yes, no.
It's just gross.
I will tell you, when I interviewed Myra for the book, Because Enough is Enough, she told me, and it's in the book, that during this time, she did feel sorry for him, for Murdaugh. Like, he's describing his wife and his son, and finding his wife and his son, and he's talking about, you know, I'm on the phone with 911, and I was trying, he says, I was trying to help Pawpaw and Mags, and his voice is breaking, and he says, I went back and forth between them. At that point, Myra says she had tears in her eyes, not visibly rolling down her cheek, but she, you know, tears in her eyes. And in front of her was a box of tissues. And the guy sitting to the left of her, who was the original jury foreperson until somebody named Becky Hill's friend, the new foreperson, but she sat next to him. She looked at him. He had kind of tears welling up in his eyes. They looked at the tissue box together, and Myra kind of looked at him, and he nodded his head, and she slid the tissue box to him, and then he took the tissues and gave them to Murdaugh. And that, ladies and gentlemen, was a showstopper. I mean, a showstopper. According to Myra, Judge Newman looked like a deer in headlights. He didn't know what in the heck just happened. It was a big deal. And the whole courtroom just kind of had a hush. Like, now all of a sudden, like, what in the hell is going on? We got jurors over here that are crying, handing Murdaugh tissues. Do you guys remember that?
Yes. Yeah. The camera didn't News. Show Myra. The camera did not show Myra.
No.
But I remember that he got somebody handed him some tissue. And what you were thinking is, thank God. Because we live in a culture where we're not comfortable with snot running out of our nose and dribbling down our face.
Even NBC News reported this. They said at one point, a juror nearby slid a box of tissues towards him.
Yeah.
And there was an attorney, his name's Dave Mathis, he's an upstate attorney here, and he kind of broke it down and said the jurors were seeing Murdaugh as a human, and they were reacting in a way that one might expect under these tragic circumstances. So all of a sudden, yeah, now you've got everybody in
so the much for Liz's right, but so much
right.
for Liz's assumption, yeah.
Yeah, and for somebody who was watching that trial and tweeting about it constantly, I'm very surprised if she would even say that, because Myra was the one, and everybody knew it.
But she's so infected with her hatred. Gee, when have we seen this just recently? But you get a mob of stupidity that is so infected with hatred for a particular person, it clouds everything that they see. They cannot see this person as a human being because their hatred overwhelms them and their ability to process any information about the person.
You're talking about the CEO of United Healthcare.
Nah, not really.
All right.
But this is true of Alec Murdoch. The hatred that they generated, to get the mob whipped into just a hysteria of hatred isn't that difficult to do. And it sells. It's a very lucrative thing to do. And that's what media did with respect to Alec Murdoch. Anyway, keep going.
That's what media did in respect to the CEO of United Healthcare.
It's what media did with Donald Trump. You don't get that one, Frank? It's what media did with Donald Trump. They just hate the guy. No matter what he does, it's evidence of something evil because you absolutely hate him. So it was easy to take that same dynamic and switch it to Alec Murdoch because it's so lucrative to do. It's a well-known psychological phenomena. There's really little that binds us as powerfully as ignorant hatred. But anyway, so seeing him as a human being was the last thing in the world. I mean, the prosecutors had to fear that immediately. And this, I think, motivated them to spring into motion, too. So you know something, Jim? We don't know how deep and how far this went. Yeah. But it had been a threat to absolutely everybody.
Huge threat. And so on Friday, he continued to be on the stand. Murdoch did on Friday the 24th. Of 2023, and trial concluded on that day. This is an important day because Friday the 24th is the day that Becky Hill said in court to Justice Toll that on Friday night she was, apparently had some time on her hands to go rummaging around Facebook, and she briefly saw a post. On that Friday, she briefly saw a post on Walter Burrow's mouth where Hill said she attributed the juror's ex-spouse, where he said something along the lines like he noticed his ex-wife was saying she was on the jury and saying stuff about the verdict and what it was going to be. And the ex-husband said she was talking way too much. That is the post that Becky Hill said she saw on that Facebook group on Friday.
And we know now that's a lie. We know she never saw that post. Excuse me, it's a lie. She made it up. That's not
true.
Even a dispute. Yeah.
It's a day after Myra basically teared up and handed him the tissues to the juror who handed them to Murdoch. The day after. Okay. So now you continue. Let's go to Monday, February 27th. And Judge Newman, now is going to talk to 785 about the Facebook post. Now, but he's also going to talk to her about the email. But first he's going to talk to her about the Facebook post because he hasn't got the anonymous email yet. So it is Monday the 27th. And this is when Becky brings her in from the jury. She was outside smoking with the jurors. She brings her in. Becky interrogates her in her office, talks to her. Becky asks her, when it's Myra, which way is she thinking of voting, those type of things. And then she's called into Judge Newman's office at the end of Monday. And she's brought into the chambers, and they talk about it. And Newman asked Hill, Becky, to produce a copy of the post, and she couldn't because it didn't exist. So she couldn't produce a copy. And Newman interviewed Juror 785, Myra, about this at the end of that day, on that Monday. So nothing became
of it. But Fairly Read, his interview of Myra is so typical of how stupid Newman is. She did not understand what he was asking her about. He didn't explain it. So she's answering questions because she doesn't understand the context of what he's asking. I call him Boob Newman, I'm being kind, believe it or not, because he didn't ask questions that would elicit insightful, informed answers because the questions themselves were so poorly worded and so stupid. So Myra is actually
she didn't know what she was in
about
there
what he's
for,
talking
and
about.
She knew.
Right.
She knew she hasn't talked to her ex-husband. She didn't talk to her for him for 10 years. She knew she had restraining
order. But she doesn't know what lies Becky has told. She doesn't know what lies Becky's told. She has no idea what the narrative is that she's being expected to respond to. So she's responding. You know, that's a horrible situation. That's where she should have had a legal representation, a good attorney to say, wait a minute, we need to understand some basic ground rules here. What the hell are you guys talking about? And then I'll let her talk. And it's not to protect her because she's doing something wrong, but it's because there's no clarity when you have a judge that stupid, that says such stupid things in such a stupid way. Myra can't understand what he's asking.
By the way, the Facebook post that she's talking about, this Tim Stone down in Georgia, he deleted it. He deleted the post on the 15th or the 16th. I don't recall which one, but it was one of those 2 days in February. So somebody needs to explain to me how she finds a post on February 24th that was deleted on the 16th.
She being Becky Hill. Maybe she didn't. Maybe somebody that's scurrying around looking for stuff says, here's some evidence that we can use if it ever pops up, and they never check back to see that it had been deleted. So when Becky needs to produce this false narrative to the judge, she's got some people to say, yeah, here's the backup. Here's your backup. Well, and Becky might have panicked. Yeah. Becky might have panicked to say, wait a minute, the email you're talking about that I just told the judge existed doesn't even exist, and all we've got is something you saw that's now been deleted. I mean, she had to be panicking. You know, one thing Becky does deserve is some kind of an award, an acting award, for being able to act, to fulfill her job requirements when there had to be enormous pressure on her given all the balls she was trying to keep in the air with all the lies she's telling and all the malfeasance she's engaged in. She's in line for the, best criminal in a high-pressure situation in January, February of 2024 that we have. I mean, she deserves some kind of a special category of Academy Award for this because you didn't really notice that she was stressed. I mean, Frank and I would be sweating bullets if we were involved in this kind of intrigue. Most people with a conscience and any kind of moral compass at all wouldn't be doing this to start with, but we wouldn't be able to do it so seamlessly. I think that she had the confidence of several people backing her up. I don't think she did this by herself.
But the reason she started talking to Newman about it in the first place is because he was mentioning an email that he had received on that Monday. And so she thought it was the Facebook post, Becky said. And she's talking about the Facebook. And then Newman's like, wait a minute, Facebook post, what are you talking about? Oh, yeah, well, I talked to the juror, blah, blah, blah.
So Newman's boobery even confused Becky Hill? That guy also deserves an award for biggest boob in a high-profile criminal trial that I can think of in Elaine's lifetime. There we go. That's what the trophy should be. So he confused Becky?
Yeah. Myra is sent back to the jury at the end of Monday. She's like, all right, send her back. And so they come in on Tuesday, the day after. And on that particular day, on Tuesday, Newman called the lawyers on both sides to approach and discuss an email he received the day before, which was that Monday email. And that's the email that...
This is Christine. It's Christine Avery's email.
The email that Christine Avery sent. Even Avery,
not the Facebook
reporter
thing.
Avery... Even reporter Avery Wilkes reported on his X page at 1:41 in the afternoon on February 28th. He says, right before lunch, Newman called the lawyers in on both sides to approach to discuss an email he received. He said, I have no further information about the email. So now we are on Tuesday.
Wait a minute. How did he have any? He has no further information? How does Avery Wilkes have any information about this?
Only because Newman called it. Only because Newman, in the public record, right before lunch, he broke and said he needed to talk to the attorneys about an email. So come to my desk.
How can he talk about an email when he never saw the email?
No, he saw the email. There's a Facebook post that nobody saw because it didn't exist. There's the email from Christine
Right.
They all came in on the same day, that Monday.
Stay with us on True Crime in the Lowcountry. We'll be right back after this short commercial break. Don't go away.